Welcome to How I Raised It, the podcast that goes behind the scenes with entrepreneurs who've raised capital. We uncover the tips, tricks, and techniques they use to get investors to write a check. Strap in and turn it up.
Hi, welcome to another episode of How I Raised It, produced by Foundersuite.com. Today, I have Ali Magyar coming to us from Vancouver, Washington. Ali is the CEO of Hub. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me today.
Thanks for being part. It's a beautiful Friday morning here. How's it looking up in Vancouver, Washington today?
We'll take every day of fall sunshine we can get. So it looks like today's one of those days.
Awesome. Awesome. When does the rainy season actually kick in?
September. Okay. It's the same weather as Seattle, just sometimes a little bit more extreme, but it's actually been unseasonably warm and nice. So it's been a nice Indian summer for us throughout this year.
That's great. It's such a beautiful part of the country. You're lucky to live up there. Awesome. So thanks for joining me today. What is Hub? What do you guys do?
Well, Hub is in the meetings industry. So we like to say that we power meaningful connections at events. So we help with the back-end business process automation when it comes to collecting, managing, and marketing your event data. And we also help with attendee experiences, like building out their calendars and their schedules and helping with one-on-one and one-to-many meetings while they're on-site at events.
Cool. And so your customer, I guess, would be like, is a large tech company putting on like at the Salesforce conference or Oracle World? Is that kind of the target customer or smaller size? Or
yeah, we do a mixture of mid-market and enterprise. So for example, Microsoft is a customer and they run some of their largest customer and partner events on our platform. And then we have smaller associations. As long as they have reserved meetings, our platform is a right fit for them.
Interesting. And what were you doing? Where'd you come up with this idea? Were you an event planner, manager?
Yeah, I sure was. So in my previous career, I ran a agency that produced and managed some of the world's largest technology conferences for Fortune 50 companies. So when I started my career in early 2000, technology was fax machines. So people would fax in registrations. We'd put them in an Excel spreadsheet. And I found that I wanted to find ways of automating our processes so that we could take use of our most valuable resource, which was our people. So working in corporate high tech and producing events in corporate high tech, I decided to bite the bullet and build my own technology that could help our team. And so at first we used the technology inside of my agency, and over 2 years we perfected use of it across all of our clients. And then in 2015, I decided to go to market and really see how the market responded to our product with other companies and other meeting planners.
Cool. So you've been around 3+ years, going on 4 years, I guess. That's great.
We have.
You know, we do an event in June called Startup Funding 2.0, and it's small. It's a couple hundred people usually. Is it something we would look at to use, or is it for larger scale events?
Yeah, it could be something that you'd use depending on the complexity of your needs. So we manage the collection and management of all the content. So if you do a call for content, so people are suggesting ideas to you or speakers are suggesting what they want to talk about at the event. We manage the voting process. So if you had startups that were submitting that, you know, maybe wanted to do a company presentation, you actually could have graders come in and grade and collaborate and comment so that you could decide which ones you want to accept or decline. And from that process, we just manage the whole sort of communication process so that once you've accepted your content, they can update their profile, their session information, and all of that instantly translate to your marketing site so that you have instant information that you're marketing in terms of the value of your event. And then that goes into some attendee-facing tools that allows them to sort of add people they're interested in, book meetings, add certain breakouts to their calendar. So it really goes into the on-site experience and being able to collect their feedback in terms of evaluations on-site as well.
Very interesting. Cool. And is it based on a per-event pricing model, or is it a monthly subscription, annual subscription? How's it priced?
Yeah. So we offer on a per event basis, or we also offer annual recurring revenue type of model as well, or ARR.
Is it affordable for small folks like us that are doing events? Yeah.
Sure. I think if you have a volume of events, if you're producing multiple events, then a subscription model can work for smaller events. Because some of in the meetings industry, what we're really starting to take advantage of is data. So you want to be able to see who are your best speakers across which sessions, how are your attendees evaluating you, and what personas do they come from. So I think it is an affordable solution for someone that hosts, you know, maybe of your size events, maybe five or more events, then you can come in to start to use the platform across those and use the data. But in general, I would say our clients tend to more of the mid-market to enterprise scale.
Sure. Yeah, great. Awesome. Okay. So talk about, let's get into the fundraising. I see a pretty interesting list of investors, but maybe start off with how did you, it sounds like you maybe bootstrapped it in your early days when this was still under your agency. And then when did you know it was time to go raise some money?
Yeah. You know, I think that's every entrepreneur's dilemma is at what point do you go and look at raising money? So for me, I did bootstrap. So when we went to market in 2015, I self-funded that. So very small team, very small marketing budget. But we ended the year with 21 paying customers and about $650,000 in revenue. So we knew that there was a market and that it could be very successful. And we counted, you know, key name brands as a part of our first go-to-market. So we had Microsoft, Intel, Atlassian, Tableau Software. So some of the biggest names in technology across events. And so I looked at that opportunity and I said, okay, I could continue to bootstrap. Or what is the market telling me right now? So is the market telling me that there is a bigger opportunity that if I raise money, I could grow at a much faster rate? And also that I would be one of the first to market with a SaaS platform for this. So in terms of competition, you have a limited time frame for when you sort of own the market and have very limited competition. So you really have to look at what the market is telling you to decide it when the right time is to do that first round of fundraising.
Yeah, interesting. So who were your initial investors? How did you approach it? You're up in Washington, Oregon, Washington/Oregon area. How did you kind of approach fundraising for your, I guess, seed round or pre-seed round?
Sure. Well, I've always been a bootstrapped entrepreneur. So this is my third company. And as a part of that, I've always self-funded. And so when it came to raising money, I had absolutely no idea what that meant. And I think as a result of being an entrepreneur, sometimes you're so heads down all the time on just building your business that you haven't had time to build out a community. And that's really where I found myself, you know, as we decided to look at fundraising is I didn't know what a cap table was. I didn't even really know what venture capital was. But I knew that I had an idea and I knew that it was something that I could take to market if I had some funding. So I was really fortunate to get introduced to the Seattle Angel Conference, which was my first sort of foray into understanding what it meant to be an early stage startup and what the funding life cycle could look like. Okay. And so I was actually on a plane and was reading about the Seattle Angel Conference, and the deadline was the very next day for any applications. And so I emailed them and I said, hey, I'm going to apply. I'll have everything done by tomorrow. And they responded and said, we don't think you're going to be able to get everything done in time. Why don't you pitch in the fall? And I said, no, you don't know me. You don't know my meetings management execution background. I'll be fine. So we submitted, and that is one of the best ways of learning truly what the pitch cycle could look like, because you go in and you've got 1 minute to describe your company. And then if you make it to the next round, you're getting lots of people asking you questions, talking about your model, how do you scale? And in the Seattle Angel Conference, there was about four or five different rounds where it just kept going from one group to the next to the next. And being able to take each of those rounds as a learning opportunity to find out what were people asking, what was the confusion in my business model, how was I going to scale, and how was I looking to totally transform my industry in a clear and succinct way. When you have 5 minutes or 10 minutes to be able to pitch your company, your vision, and your people, it's a really great forcing function to have all of your data and all of your stats done behind the scenes so that you can answer questions just off the top of your head.
Yeah. Okay. Did it lead to a check from the Seattle Angels?
Yes, luckily it did. So we ended up, I think there were several hundred startups that initially applied, and we ended up winning first place in that competition. That was May of 2016. So we were awarded an investment from them. And as a part of doing that, I started to meet a wide variety of different investors in the angel community, which is typically where early stage startups begin their process. So I got introduced in the Portland area to the Oregon Angel Fund, which is now the Oregon Venture Fund, as well as Elevate Capital. Mm-hmm. And as part of those relationships, spent a lot of time with them understanding the options of what early stage startups have in terms of a convertible note or doing our A round, and what are the pluses and the minuses at the stage of the company in terms of what that looked like. And so we ended up working with them hand in hand and decided to do our Series A. We also ended up competing and winning first place at the Bend Venture Conference as well. So I think by the end of the year, I was so used to pitching, it was just second nature, that it was pretty easy to work with our investors in the local Portland community and finalize our Series A. So we ended up raising a total of $3.7 million across all of our investment vehicles in the fall of 2016.
Yeah, that's exciting. Were they priced rounds or were you using notes? I mean, you're sort of doing a lot of different fundraising. How did you structure it actually?
Yeah. So in the very beginning, like with the Seattle Angel Conference, it was on a note and it had a cap on the note. And there's pluses and minuses to thinking about how you write notes and whether there's a cap or no cap. And then we moved from there to a priced round at our Series A, and all of those notes converted into our Series A.
Got it. Yep. And then I also see some other, if PitchBook is accurate, I see like Alliance of Angels, Cascade Angels. I see, it sounds like a couple different angel groups. So it sounds like you were doing the angel group circuit or working the angel groups. Maybe talk about it a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I really appreciate about the Portland market specifically is the environment that it gives for entrepreneurs to succeed. And in Portland, the Oregon Venture Fund, or then the Oregon Angel Fund, Elevate Capital, Cascade Angels, Portland Seed Fund, they all work together as a close-knit group in Portland. The benefits of working in a tight angel network is the availability to share diligence information. So if you go through diligence with one group, they'll share it with another group that they oftentimes co-lead with or co-share with. And so it made the process as an entrepreneur a lot easier because of the environment that's here in Portland and how they shared the information through the diligence process.
Is the risk that if one of those groups sort of turns you down, that the others then get cold feet? I mean, I can see the advantage of them all working together. I can also see maybe some disadvantages. What do you think?
Yeah, I think each individual fund, I call it co-opetition, right? They cooperate together, but they're also in competition for deals. And I think each individual fund has its own criteria. So it has a different fund amount. It has a different term on the fund. It has a different maybe focus in terms of verticals or types or styles of entrepreneurs that they invest in. So I've seen, just being a part of the startup community in Portland, where it may not be a right fit for one, but it absolutely is for the other. So I don't think it's if you get turned down by one, you'll get turned down by everyone. And I think that continues to scale as we raised our Series B. We saw the same thing. We got turned down by a lot of venture capital companies, and we turned down a lot of venture capital that wasn't a right fit for us. So it is very much a unique niche, and you'll find different types of investors and different types of groups.
Yeah. Any hacks for, these angel groups? I did pitch, I guess, Sandhill Angels when we were raising our money a couple years ago. And, some of these angel groups, like, I guess I always say the advantage is you can get in front of a pretty good audience of people with checks. The disadvantage is you have to kind of step through a lot of hoops sometimes.
Right.
Tips or hacks for hacking the angel, group? Yeah.
Definitely. I think just investment in general over the years has become more talked about. There's a lot more people doing it. And I think to get the best sort of use of your time, because as an entrepreneur, going and pitching is just one more thing you have to do. You still have to be running your company, hitting all your metrics, growing. And so I think about it about time invested. And so there are groups like the Alliance of Angels, but they're all individual investors. So they may write checks for $25,000 a piece, but then you're dealing with 10 different people, 10 different sets of questions, 10 different views and perspectives. So to raise $250,000 can be a significant amount of work. Versus you go to someone like the Oregon Venture Fund, and it's a fund. So you have a single point of contact where everyone contributes to the fund, and then the fund team is the one that decides how they distribute the money. So instead, you know, to raise $250,000 is a cinch with an angel fund because you're dealing with one person. So your time invested can end up being a much larger check size when you're looking at working with a fund versus working with individual angels.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay. Is the Seattle Angel Conference still an ongoing thing for anyone who's interested?
Yeah. It is, yeah. Seattle Angel Conference is ongoing. I helped promote it here with a lot of startups because it was a great start to us. Bend Venture Conference is also an annual event here in the Northwest. Mm-hmm. You have the Willamette Angel Conference. And then most recently, Microsoft Ventures, which is now M12, just announced a doing. I think applications just closed, but I believe that's an annual thing that they're doing as well.
Cool. Do you know when the Seattle Angel Conference is? Is it?
It happens twice a year. So once in the spring and once in the fall.
Great. Okay, great. So far, it sounds like your fundraising has been pretty local. Do you have any desire or aspiration to raise from Silicon Valley or other areas? Or do you think you can fund this company locally?
Well, so that was our Series A, and that was in 2016. So as an organization, we have doubled in size every year since we've been in market since 2015. So this year, we hit some key milestones. We have over 100 customers now. And it really was the same approach that I took at our A to look at what is the market saying? What is the market opportunity right now? And do we want to raise additional funds? We got to a point where we were at break even, so we could have continued to bootstrap. That was really our goal in our A, was to raise enough money to fund the company, to double its size every year and get to break even, to have options for what we wanted to do. So earlier this year, I started talking with a variety of venture capital and private equity all around the country. So the Bay Area, LA, Boston, New York, Midwest. So I met with probably over 60 VC and private equity companies to really explore what that meant to raise capital. And I will say that the experience in raising capital at that level is very different from what you look at with angel groups. So it was a really big education for me in terms of just even how you deliver your pitch, what they're interested in, the KPIs that they're interested in, because it is another level above what early stage angel investors look like. So for me, this was all about looking at our future at Hub and how we could scale and find the right partner to scale. And I can't say that or stress that enough, because whoever your investor partner is, ends up being your right hand at your company. I mean, they're there along with you for every decision you're making, every strategic turn or change. And so really looking at cultural alignment and who your board will be as a part of that transaction is so important to the long-term success of your company. And so that for us was a part of our journey over the last 6 months. But we did just announce last month our Series B. We ended up partnering with a private equity company called Five Elms Capital out of the Midwest. And we raised another $6.3 million for our company. So our total funding is about $10 million to date.
Great. Congratulations. That was Five Elms?
Five Elms Capital.
Very interesting. So, okay, this is really interesting. So let's dig into that a little bit. You mentioned there are a lot of differences between pitching to PE and VC versus the angels. Anything kind of stand out in particular? Was it just more metrics driven, or, you know, what was really some big differences that people should prepare for?
Yeah. Well, and I think it's just a difference of stage of company as well. So usually if you're pitching to angels, that's a very early stage. You're just at proof of concept, or maybe even prior to proof of concept. And so with angel groups, they want to know your traction with your customer. And so they're early stage indicators in terms of knowing that the company is on the right track. By the time you start to raise large scale money from venture capital and private equity, those things are a given. you aren't raising money at that level unless you have the customer traction. So, you know, going in and saying that we were taking business from our competitors or that we had grown with these strategic accounts, that was all nice, but it wasn't what they were there to hear. What they were there to hear was, how are we disrupting our industry? How are we the unicorn of the event management space? And what was our big picture to go public and to take over and transform what was happening? So it was much more of the big picture strategy selling than it was about your traction. So your traction, your metrics, that's all just a part of, they're going to do the deal as long as your business looks solid, but they're only investing in it if the market is right, the market is growing, and if you have a big picture for in terms of how to disrupt your market.
That's interesting. Yeah. Okay. And you mentioned both VC and PE firms. So maybe was there any difference between, you know, when you're going in to pitch a venture capital firm versus a private equity firm? Would the story change? Would the pitch be different?
Yeah. You know, what I found in my journey, and I'm sure it's different based on the vertical or the industry that you're in, but what I found in my journey was that private equity, most of the time, was about roll-up transactions where could they acquire us and we roll up a whole bunch of other companies to very quickly disrupt the market. And so that was the perspective of a lot of private equity. There's a lot of private equity activity in our space right now because it is, you know, one market dictates another in terms of trends and history. So in our market, there is one big giant and a whole bunch of mom and pop shops. So disruption is happening by consolidation and roll-ups. So there's a lot of private equity interest there versus venture capital is more about how can I come in and give you investment capital that allows you to grow at the fastest rate possible over the next 3 years. Now you do find some hybrids, and I found this to be very interesting, Five Elms as an example, where there's hybrid companies where they're private equity and venture capital. So they do earlier stage deals and they don't force roll-ups, but they also do roll-ups or larger investments. And so it can be an interesting proposition to work with a company like that because they'll give you the growth capital that you need to grow very quickly over a set couple of years, but they also have future funding to do follow-on rounds or help you with acquisition. So it's a very interesting place to be as you think about your long-term strategy, making sure you're finding the right partner, not just for right now, but for where you want to be in the next 5 years as well.
You know, that's really interesting. We really haven't had too many folks on the show that have been out pitching and talking to private equity firms. So this is a new, fresh perspective. When you're talking to them, are they looking at you as the acquirer or the potential to be acquired, and or both? And I guess if you have this large player in the space, how does that change the pitch?
Well, I think private equity in general, they want to go really big, right? So they've got very large funds. They want to go big. So when they're talking about a roll-up strategy, they're thinking about how can I fund your company to help you roll up all those companies? Yeah. Venture capital is more the option of could you be acquired by someone in your space for 10x what I'm paying you right now in the next 3 years so that I get my return. So I think private equity tends to think a little bit bigger in terms of where they want to go and the size that they want to grow the company versus venture capital is more of how fast can you grow in this time frame to be able to exit to either private equity or to a competitor in the space that's the giant.
You can pass on this question if you want, but how does it sit with your stomach of the idea of, hey, let's give you lots of money, a big war chest to go take out all these competitors, mom and pops? Like, you know, that's maybe a different strategy than what you set out to do. Or maybe it's not, but like, how does that like sit with your gut?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's an interesting evaluation. You know, as you mature as a company, as you think about the market, you really start to do a lot of build versus buy analysis. And so, you know, if you already have a strong platform that everything else is bolt onto that helps you to be able to have a horizontal platform or stack, the question really starts to be, if I did that now and purchased it and bolted it onto my company, could it integrate well? Would it be seamless for my customers? Would it help me gain market share or access to other customers that I don't have access to that I could cross-sell platforms to? And what does that revenue and sustainability look like? Versus if I take 6 months to build it because I've got money to hire the people to build it, would it integrate better into my platform? Would it provide a unique hook that the competitor doesn't right now? So you really have to evaluate from a timing perspective what actually makes the most sense for your company to grow the fastest.
As you're going forward and contemplating this, do the angels who put in those early checks have much of a voice or opinion, or are they just like, hey, you're kicking ass, you do this, do what you need to do, we're here for the ride? I you know, how do those early investors get involved if they're still very active?
They are definitely still very active, and I am very grateful for that. So one of the things in the early stages of doing a round with angels is they help you to put the infrastructure in place for your organization to be able to grow and be successful. So when we did our A round, we were forced to create a board. And that was a little bit terrifying for me because I've always been an entrepreneur, so I've never had a boss. Right. And so to have a board was like, oh my God, are they going to fire me? What do I do? What do I share? What do I not share? And so that took me a little while to get used to. And so, but because of that structure, it really helped me be successful in our Series B because we were already so well organized based on the help of that early stage investment in terms of our quarterly reports, the KPIs that we had, how we interacted with the board, how we used our board. And I think that's one thing I learned, probably the biggest lesson, was they're not my boss. They are my boss, but I'm the one that's responsible for utilizing them in the best way possible. So if I have cash flow questions, I immediately know that I go to Nitin on my board. And on technology or scaling questions, I can go to CJ or George on my board and just really use them to help be a voice of reason and someone that can actually help me to solve problems. So for me, those relationships are integral to the success of our company because they've spent 2 years in helping me to get to the phase that we are now. Yeah. And I think you always have to be evaluating who's right to be our partner at this moment. And for me, I'm very fortunate that the people that were there to help us form that in the very beginning are still the right people at this stage of growth for us. So as we brought Five Elms on for our Series B, they took a board seat. But the other three people that were on our board remained on our board as a part of our A round. And so we have a high functioning team now of people that have been along for the journey, as well as our new capital partner.
Very good. Very interesting. Okay. Well, I'll let you get back to plans for global domination here in the event space. But any last tips or words of advice that we haven't covered, anything you would do differently if you were doing this all over again? Anything we haven't covered?
Oh, I think if you ask what I learned or what I did differently, we probably could be on this station for a very, very long time. I'm very passionate about speaking about entrepreneurs, about the journey. I'm very passionate about talking about women, specifically as it comes to venture funding and minorities in venture funding, because it is a completely different world at the point where you go out for venture funding. And it's a very real learning that I had. So, on our hub.me website, there's a resources section with a blog where we have posted a lot of information that's available for entrepreneurs as well that we'd love to make available. Mm-hmm. But I think in general, it's, the one word that we have really been talking about in terms of a core value and really looking at how our core values are changing over time. But grit is the number one word that I would encourage entrepreneurs to think about, because I got turned down just as many times as anyone else. I got told that my business idea didn't make sense, that my business model wouldn't work, that, we were barking up the wrong tree. And I could have easily said, oh, you're right, let me change that. But I didn't. I said, I know my business. I know what's happening. I hear you and I understand what you're saying, but I don't believe that to be true because of these data-driven models that I have. So I was using real data. But ultimately, it's that grit and that belief in yourself and your product and the ability to just continue to go regardless of how many times someone tells you you're crazy. And I think that's where you really see the success start to come in, is when you have that grit.
No, that's great. And we will include a link or otherwise make available the deck from the Elevate Inclusion Summit. Do you want to just maybe touch on what that was all about for a moment? What was the Elevate?
So Nitin Rai is the head of Elevate Elevate Capital in the Portland area, and his fund is specifically to help minority entrepreneurs in the early stage capital. So he was one of our investors at our Series A, and he also has served on our board. And so it is a discussion that he is passionate about, is helping entrepreneurs to be able to have equal access to capital and education and support. And so a couple of weeks ago in Portland, he hosted the Elevate Inclusion Summit, which brought together, we have venture capital brought together to talk about the challenges for minority entrepreneurs and access to capital. So it was an amazing, inspiring event to be a part of, because it was our first step in changing the conversation and bringing light and hope to a wide variety of entrepreneurs.
Yeah, that sounds great. Okay, well, this is excellent, Allie. So, thank you so much. If people want to learn more, it's hub.me, H-U-B-B.me. Am I getting it right?
You got it. Yeah, hub with two Bs.
Hub with two Bs, dot me. Anything you want to plug or call attention to?
Yeah. You know, every good company is a result of good people, and we wouldn't be where we are without some fantastic team members on our hub team. So with this fundraising, if you're in the Portland, Vancouver area, we are hiring a significant amount of roles over the next couple of months as we continue to grow and scale. So I invite you to reach out. I'm also on Twitter at Allie Magyar. So welcome any messages or communication. I love being a part of the entrepreneur community and being able to help others share through the journey that I've been in and learn from them as well.
It sounds like an exciting journey. So this is really cool. All right, Allie, thank you so much. We'll catch you after you make your first 10 acquisitions and start rolling up. That would be
interesting too,
actually. I would kind of dig on that. All right. Thank you. Have a great weekend, and best of luck with Hub.
Thank you. Appreciate it.